presentations. I'll stop the sharing.
Thank you. All right, we'll start with questions and comments from commissioners. Start at this end. Questions, Commissioner Brown?
I don't have a question at the moment, but I did want to say that the virtual open house is not open. So as the consultants and staff have been referencing that, if you go to that site, it's still not open.
I was just on it, and Commissioner Peterson's on it right now.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
You had me word there, Sandy.
It wasn't working for me as of like 5 minutes ago. Sorry.
Commissioner, questions, comments?
Question.
Yes, Commissioner Gittleson.
Two questions. The maps, the detailed maps that you showed us in those sessions, are those going to be available to the public or for, will they be on?
Yes.
Okay, great. Will they be on the open?
They'll be available in the in-person open houses. We'll have the printed out maps for people to view.
Okay, great. Then that'll have the detailed, like where you say, oh, the stations may be here, that one?
Correct.
Okay, great.
Yep.
And then you may have told me this and I may have missed it, but what is the goal of sharing the vehicles now? Why is that open to the public? A little, just a refresher on that. When are you going to decide and the things that play into it are okay. Anyway, that's sort of a general question that I just wanted a refresher on, and what is the influence of the public with that? So thank you.
Yes. Chair Brown, do you want me to take that question?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the purpose of the engagement period as a whole in this public hearing, one, to kick off this milestone to bring the information to the commission as well as to the community and the public, and to kick off this discussion period and conversation. To note, we will be coming back to your commission at a later meeting to summarize what we've heard, particularly from the initial conceptual alignment public outreach. So we will come back to the commission, provide you a summary and a presentation on what we heard during milestone two, including the alignment and the vehicle types. But with respect to why the vehicle types now, broad picture, Judy, the current proposal of this project is not to set a vehicle type now. So that's a decision that we can carry forward into future phases of the project. Should the commission choose to make a decision or do otherwise, that is something that your commission could elect to do so, but that is not the intent of the project at this time. So what we're doing now with the option for the, or the recommendation for holding a public hearing, including the vehicle types, is to allow the public to respond to the vehicle type analysis that we've presented today, the various pros and cons that are there in the staff report and in the presentation, to provide feedback to your commission and express their opinions and concerns regarding the different vehicles that are being proposed. The proposal at this stage will be to take those three types of vehicles and carry the analysis of the ridership, the operations, the other things that are contingent upon those vehicles through the summer and early fall months to come back with that refined analysis. So we want to hear now the input on those three vehicle types so that we can have a better informed decision as we do our modeling and analysis over the coming months to come back with that refined analysis.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schifrin.
Yes, thank you. I have a little concern about being on the commission and providing input before the community meetings. So, I mean, it seemed reasonable to have a public hearing on this to get the introduction to kick off the process, but is it really the expectation that the commission would be providing input today as opposed to providing input after we hear from the community meetings and it comes back to us with information about those community the community input and then provide our input just seems a little bit like putting the cart before the horse, if I'm understanding the staff report correctly. So what is the intention here?
I think I hear you on that. The intention is more to kick off the public hearing, so, or to kick off the public engagement period. So I think, and Mitch, if you want to jump in, if I say something incorrectly here, but I think the best course of action and recommendation would be to have this time be a time of, you know, questions that the commission may have. Reserve your input and direction until after the public engagement period is completed. We will come back to your commission with a summary and presentation of what we heard. And then if you have any direction that you want to give at that point, it makes sense that that would be the better course of action.
I think that from my perspective, that's a correct way of going forward. I'm sorry that the staff report didn't sort of frame it that way, because it seemed to be asking us to provide input before really hearing from the public, except for this public hearing. So I think the process you've just outlined is a good process. Thank you.
Commissioner Rotkin.
I have two areas of concern. There's some confusion in the community, I think, and I have this confusion about the three vehicle types. I think the use of the phrase light rail, you know, that by the definitions we have here, that would require a catenary. The multiple unit, the TIG-M, for example, would be a multiple unit service.
No, it would not. It's more of a light rail vehicle, just to answer that question.
What defines that? I'm trying to understand, because in effect,
it's a,
go ahead.
It's a, so the basis, the basic definition is going to be whether or not it's FRA compliant. And then it puts it into the multiple unit camp. But multiple units have, as Mark presented in his part of the presentation, a power-driven
locomotive
cab at either end.
So, again, I think, but it would, could that the multiple unit could be battery, it says on the list here, could be battery
correct.
Operated, which is, I think, most people's expectation, or hydrogen or something, self-contained propulsion of some form.
Correct.
And I think that needs to be made kind of clear to people, because I've got a lot of questions from members of the public who don't, who think, you know, is the multiple unit thing a big, huge locomotive that, you know, that's really traditional train model. So I think in making the presentation to the public, I think there's a need for a little bit more clarity there, what it is that's driving these definitions of the three different types. Because I think people, you think of light rail, they're kind of thinking of the middle,
sure.
The middle one as well, of the three that you've presented.
Sure. So I think I can clarify that or attempt to. As you mentioned, locomotive hauled trains is really readily, you know, understandable. That's more akin to what you would see with your Amtrak service. It's similar to freight, where you've got the vehicle that drives the train, and then you have your carriages, your cars that are attached to that locomotive or locomotives, and then you can attach more, take off more, some cars. And provide flexibility in terms of capacity and ridership, but it's a bigger vehicle, heavier. Light rail is obviously a lighter vehicle. It's not going to be FRA compliant for their crashworthiness, for instance. So light rail vehicles like overhead catenary, they have a smaller driven vehicle that will drive the train set. They can also had cars added to it and not, but you're going to need that overhead catenary or third rail terms for propulsion, for the energy for the propulsion. There are battery ones, but if we were to go back to the slide, or if you look at the presentation, or if you go to the staff report, battery does not provide a long range. So battery options today do not provide for your light rail or your multiple units the distance to go from Pajaro to Santa Cruz on a charge. And we're talking only about the type of vehicles that are CPUC approved at this point. So we're not talking about vehicles that people may see in other countries that are not approved by the CPUC or the FRA, for, if we're talking about the FRA compliant vehicles. Multiple units are in the middle, and they are not, they're more a newer technology. They kind of are a mix of the two, so they're going to be definitely lighter than your locomotive haul trains, but they're going to be heavier traditionally than your light rail vehicles. The multiple units have the cab driving in either direction, and then they have the propulsion usually internally, so they don't need to have the overhead catenary or a third rail. They can have the propulsion as part of the equipment. So that's the key characteristics. If we need to go into some more detail, we can, you know, come back to the commission and have a more thorough explanation of some of the differences, or I can take some questions today.
So, again, responding to things people in the public have asked me about or quite commented on, the constraints that require that sort of look like they're ruling out the light rail really have to do with funding from the feds and the state, whether they'd be willing to fund what they're trying to do around the rest of the state and access to the rest of the system in the state. Those are constraints that drive, that militate against the light rail alternative, aside from the catenary. So even if you separated temporarily by time, had freight run at night on our system and the passenger stuff during the day, it doesn't fix those two problems. Is my understanding correct?
That is correct.
Okay. My second issue has to do with, I think you need to provide the public with a lot of much more. We had a presentation on this earlier, so we got some idea of what the public are going to see when they go to the site for the virtual weigh-in. One of the biggest concerns and debates and issues we get letters to the editor about have to do with setback requirements from the trail or from the bank, this on the sides or whatever. I think you need to make really clear to the public what defines those setback requirements. Where is it written? Who tells us they have to have this many feet? What kind of exceptions can be made? So aside from just showing in your work, this is how we're designing the alignment, and this is how many feet we have here, why is it necessary to have that number of feet? Could it be shorter? Are there exceptions allowed that would have a trail that basically is that far back, but in some places closer and still be legally possible? So in the presentation that we got, and from what I've seen, I think there needs to be a more vigorous kind of presentation of what's defining those setbacks. Why are they required? Who's demanding that? Why is that a constraint that we have to obey? As opposed to people thinking, oh, no, San Diego's got uses less room than that. They don't have that much setback. So why are we required to have that setback? So that's just my comment about how you do the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Questions, comments? Commissioner Peterson and then Commissioner Brown.
Thank you. I had a couple more questions about light rail. And just to make sure that I understand correctly, it's not compatible with freight based on the rails, the basic infrastructure?
No, it's not necessarily the infrastructure itself. Though when you're designing a light rail system, there's different constraints. So you may choose to, or elect to have some various different infrastructure that you may choose to have that's not compatible with freight. But on the basic level, it's whether or not it's regulated and allowed in terms of regulations. So the basic fundamental is whether or not the vehicles that are operating on the line are FRA compliant, Federal Railroad Administration. Light rail vehicles are not FRA compliant and would not be able to be interoperable with the state rail system or the Union Pacific rail line, we would have to temporarily separate or do a separate track system to be able to allow light rail vehicles on the branch line.
Okay. Yeah, so, but it sounds like there are options that maybe people would think of in like common understanding of more towards light rail in the multiple unit category.
I don't understand that question. Could you rephrase?
Just lighter, more streamlined, but allowable on a freight line.
Yes, so multiple right. units are kind of the hybrid. They're mm-hmm. between the light rail and the locomotive haul trains, so they will be lighter than locomotives and smaller, but they will not be as small and light as some of the light rail systems. And you know, the big difference between them as well is the vehicles are FRA compliant. They FRA recently in the industry has allowed the or certified them for crashworthiness.
And do you foresee a significant difference in the availability of models of trains in the next 5 or 10 years that could, you know, become as small or as cheap as light rails in the multiple unit category that is approved for freight?
They probably will not be generically as small or as lightweight as the light rail vehicles because of some of the currently some of the reasons why we have the FRA compliant and crashworthiness. Those vehicles, if they were to crash, would meet certain requirements from the FRA, which adds to some of the vehicle weight and mass. To answer your question, maybe a little bit to the side, is currently there's a lot of investment in the multiple unit space by the industry and by the state of California. Specifically, the state of California is investing in a lot of that technology and exploring that technology for use in the state rail system. So over the next 5 to 10 years, I do expect, and the industry expects, that there will be further advancements in the multiple unit space specifically. So we do expect there to be more options available.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Brown, did you have a question?
Well, I get it's a question that is not going to get answered today, but I really wanted to put a fine point on Commissioner Rotkin's question suggestion or recommendation that we have more information to help explain the setbacks. And I want to expand that to say that I think more transparency around the assumptions in general related to speeds along particular alignments. I mean, the assumptions that are being made aren't entirely clear to me more broadly. So I feel, and the setback issue is obviously one of particular concern for neighbors, and we're getting a lot of questions about that. But there are other questions, you know, and so I think about, for example, when I'm looking at the vehicle options, you know, saying that a pro is that, you know, the mid, the multiple unit trains could go up to 100 miles per hour. Well, where in Santa Cruz County is that a pro for anybody? is, you know, and a con for light rail being that it can't go over 60 miles per hour. Are we envisioning, you know, higher speeds than that? And so I guess it just raises multiple questions. So really trying to understand the assumptions that HDR and the team is building in there, I think would be helpful. I think it would be helpful for people who are weighing in this virtual open house as well, because when you look at the option, I mean, now that I can actually access it, I'm looking at it, and it you know, anybody could go in and vote for high speed as their top priority, but that's not necessarily realistic for our context. Again, just giving people some framework for understanding why these questions are being asked or what assumptions you're making related to setback speeds, you know, boarding levels, you know, sidings, the, you know, all of these things, and where, and as Commissioner Rotkin suggested, where those requirements are coming from, because we hear different messages from different stakeholders at the CPUC, you know, the CTC, and then from you all. So yeah, just really hoping that we can get some more information on that.
I can provide two things which will clarify some points, and then Sandy, well, I could make a question to the commission, a recommendation maybe. One, with respect to the speeds, just to clarify, the design team is not designing or anything to go over 60 miles an hour on the line. That's not a goal of the project. The intent of the project is design up to 60 miles an hour. Where feasible on the rail line, and that will be more apparent through the refined conceptual alignment that will come out in the fall. So when we have modeling of the line with actual vehicle equipment that we're inputting into our model, we will be able to see where we can get to certain design or to certain speeds, and that affects obviously the overall total transit time and our headways. So to clarify that for those listening and to the commission. And then a point of clarification, I know level boarding is also very important to the community. All three of the vehicle types can have level boarding. Obviously some of them have higher floor heights than others, but that just means your stations would have to be designed differently. But all of them can accommodate level boarding. And that would be the intent of the project. And then, correct me, Mitch, if I'm wrong in this, but we could recommend to the commission that if you guys would like to have a focused discussion on the CPUC requirements for the horizontal clearance, we could set up an item for a TPW to go into more detail on those aspects.
Yeah. So, hold on. We're going to let Commissioner Brown finish, and then Commissioner Peterson's waiting, and then we'll come to you, Commissioner Rotkin.
I think it would be helpful because there's so much interest in this, and it's just going to grow. But also, just something in some kind of written reference that here. You know, again, I'm just looking at what you're saying versus what we see in the survey, and how would people who are joining that virtual open house know this if they aren't here for every moment of the conversation. So just something that basically references where these requirements are, I think would be really helpful, as well as a session at some point. Thank you.
If it's possible to get a representative from the CPUC to join the meeting, I think that would be unbelievably helpful as well. Commissioner Peterson and then Commissioner Rotkin.
Thank you. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to follow in that line of thought. I think that we should be framing this information to the public in the public outreach initiative we're working on here in the lens of what is applicable to Santa Cruz County in this specific project. And I think, like, why is it a pro that high speeds possible 100 miles per hour if that is not at all applicable to Santa Cruz and the project that we're talking about? And similarly, a con of lower speeds at a 60 mile an hour max, if we're only looking at a 60 hour mile max, how is that a con? And I think similarly with the locomotive hauled trains, you could look at, you know, long range, high speed ability. Is that really a pro in the context of what we're talking about? And just framing it in the, you know, clearest way to the public that we can. And I think all three of those are pretty misleading and could be adjusted. My main question that I want to ask is, what are the ramifications of selecting a light rail vehicle that is not compatible with freight for this project?
I can answer that. So ramifications would be that you cannot operate a light rail vehicle in the same space as a freight rail vehicle. That's a requirement from our regulators. We would have to design a system that would be separate from the freight rail system. That could be achieved in various ways. The two main ones would be temporarily separate. So you physically separate the system time in a time sensitive fashion. So you could operate light rail vehicles in the daytime, for instance, as an opportunity, or in the freight rail at night. So that would be in consultation with the freight rail operator. You would have to lock out the, in a sense, the freight rail from accessing the system, so that there's no chance that a freight train could collide with a light rail vehicle. The other way of doing it would be separate tracks and separate system, so that the light rail vehicle would be totally and wholly separate all the time from the freight rail system. Those are the two ways of doing it. The other option is, or other ramifications are interoperability. So you would not be able to operate light rail vehicles on the rest of the state rail network. So it wouldn't be able to access, bring passengers from Santa Cruz or anywhere, Santa Cruz counties to Gilroy, Salinas, things of that nature in the future, should that be something that the service would like to do. The other main issue at this point is the funding regime, or the landscape for funding. Currently, the state and federal grants that we see out there are interoperable, require interoperability for the most part. A lot of the money is pushing into trains, inner city trains. So those are vehicles that could go from one region to another, or provide an inner city service. So it would be compliant for inner city service to bring passengers from Santa Cruz to Pajaro and then get on another train that can go to another city, another region. That is where the federal government and the state government are putting their money at. So in terms of funding for this project, and we know that funding, we don't have enough local funds, and we're going to need a lot of support in getting a passenger rail service on the Santa Cruz Branch rail line. So funding is key. Doing a light rail service or keeping the option for light rail makes it more challenging for our federal and state partners to be supportive of our project in terms of funding and other resources.
Yeah, and I guess that I would personally feel that would be very valuable information to include in this public outreach, is things associated with cost, because I know for a lot of the residents here in Santa Cruz County, that is a huge concern and a huge point of contention of whether or not this having a passenger train at all is feasible. So if one of them has a huge likelihood of receiving grant funding, making it more realistic compared to the other, I think that's information that should be included in something like this. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Rodkin.
And to that point, the project team will take the, I'm taking notes, and our team is taking your questions and concerns, and we will look to see what we can do to address some of these things in this engagement period.
Commissioner Rodkin. Yes, please, Commissioner Pegler.
So I won't repeat what the questions already came from Commissioners Rockin and Brown, but I wanted a couple clarifications. One, you mentioned the modeling of ridership and estimates of where the ridership might be. What was the time frame for delivering that information in your schedule?
So we're going to do that over the summer and early fall months. And we'll come back with a refined conceptual alignment in the fall. And then all of it, so that will be like a technical component of the project. And then the concept report, which comes out at the end of the project, will have a final analysis and presentation of it.
And I ask that because it, from my perspective, knowing where the ridership is going to and coming from has much to do with the station traffic, what we've called first mile, last mile, trying to get to destinations, and to some extent, perhaps even the character of the vehicles. And so I'm just trying to fit those together and keep the locomotive ahead of the carriages, if you will.
Yeah.
you also mentioned that light rail could still reach Pajaro Junction, and again, for lack of a better term, I'd almost refer to that as a first 20-mile, last 20-mile connection to the state system. That seems like if we manage the freight access issues on our rail segments, that would be possible? Is that a yes or no?
Would be possible, yes. The connection at Pajaro Station would require consultation with TAMC, who is leading that project, as well as with UP, Union Pacific. So that is a Union Pacific property. There are challenges of bringing light rail to the Union Pacific yard and the future Pajaro Station. There are challenges that could be conceivably resolved and light rail being brought to Pajaro Station. With the multiple unit and locomotive haul, it's easier because you could, for instance, bring those vehicles onto the state rail network, whereas you would have to wholly separate the lines and have a separate line connection with a light rail vehicle.
Okay, thank you.
Riley, I understand there's a waiver process through the FRA that would allow light rail to be interoperable with freight that was used in Baltimore and San Diego in the past. Is that something that we could potentially consider in the future should we determine that we want to move forward with light rail vehicles?
I don't have an answer to that one, Chair Brown. Looks like Mitch, you're...
Yes, we can consider it.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. So any further comments or questions from the commission? All right, I'm going to take it to public comment with just a reminder that this is a public hearing today. There won't be any final votes made by the commission on conceptual alignment or vehicle types, and we are looking for your input on both. So we'll start with those in the room for any public comment on this item.